introduction, and thanks, Max, for inviting me here. So it's my first time to visit PI. And today I will talk about recent work done with Chen Kexu at UCSB and Xiaoliang Qie from Stanford. And we are supported by these fundings. And I would also like to acknowledge various peoples I have discussed with during the work. So okay, when we talk about quantum many-body physics, we usually think of the ground state of a many-body system. Various quantum matters we study in condensed matter physics, such as magnets, superconductors, topological insulators, they are all ground states of a many-body system. And quantum phase transition also happens between the ground state. So the common wisdom is that quantum effect is only prominent at low temperature, which means only the ground state and several low-lying excited states needs quantum mechanical descriptions. That's why we seldom talk about quantum mechanics in highly excited states, more precisely, the finite energy density states, because we consider typically these states will thermalize and should be described as by statistical mechanics instead. So this statement was made precise by these gentlemen as eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. So the idea is that the ergodic many-body system can serve as its own heat bath and reach its thermal equilibrium within every single eigenstate. So although each individual eigenstate in the excited spectrum is a pure state, however, the reduced density matrix of a subsystem can behave like a thermal density matrix. And correspondingly, the entanglement entropy of the subsystem behaves like a thermal entropy, which scales with the volume of the subsystem. So this property is in sharp contrast to the ground state, which typically satisfies the area law if we consider gapped ground states of the local Hamiltonian. The questions are highly excited states always thermalized? And the answer is no. So the localization is an example where a many-body system does not thermalize. So in that case, the phenomenon of localization refers to the absence of diffusion in the presence of quench disorder. So because the energy cannot diffuse in a localized system, so the system cannot reach thermal equilibrium by itself. Localization was first discussed in a non-interacting system as Anderson localization. So for example, if we consider a 1D fermion chain with a random on-site potential, this kind of system will be Anderson localized. And in this case, every single particle wave function is exponentially localized. So this is due to the effect of a wave, the interference effect of a wave propagating on a disordered background. So in terms of every single particle levels, the many-body Hamiltonian can be written as the level occupation number times the level energy. And these occupation numbers are local integral of motions because they commute with each other and also commute with the Hamiltonian. And they are also locally supported because every single particle state has a localized profile. And on the other hand, these local integral of motions can be also considered as stabilizers or commuting projectors of the energy eigenstate, in the sense that each energy eigenstate can be specified as a common eigenstate of all these stabilizers and specified by its eigenvalues. So because this local stabilizer can only impose local entanglement to this many-body wave function, so the eigenstate will follow the area law entanglement entropy in the Anderson insulator, even for highly excited states. So that's why localization violates the violates ETH. So now if we include the interaction effect, the question is, does localization survive interaction? And for example, we can add this interaction to the random fermion chain. And according to these theoretical studies and various numerical verifications, the conclusion is that localization does survive in interaction as long as the disorder is strong enough. So this phenomenon is called many-body localization. It can be considered as a Fock-based generalization of the Anderson localization. And many-body localization also happens in bosonic or spin systems as well. For example, in this disordered XXZ chain. And there has been many experimental realizations of many-body localization in cold atom systems recently from fermions to bosons, and both in one dimension and three dimension. So if the disorder is strong enough, then it's possible that every energy eigenstate are localized. In this case, we say the system is in a full MBL phase. And the failure of somalization is ascribed to the extensive number of local integral of motions. And in this case, this local integral of motions, perturbatively, we can think of them as the occupation number of quasi particles, which are particles stressed by the interaction effect. So following the same spirit as Landau Fermi liquid theory, we can write down the effective Hamiltonian in terms of this local integral of motions, which includes the single particle energy, the two particle interaction, and many body interactions. So this kind of effective Hamiltonian is also RG fixed point Hamiltonian of the MBL system. And actually it's quite universal. It also applies to bosonic or spin systems as well. For example, in the bosonic system, then we should write it as in terms of these effective spins. And these effective spins are also known as the emergent conserved quantities, or may call it the stabilizers. And because these stabilizers are still local, so we still have area law entanglement entropy in every highly excited state. So that means all the highly excited states look like ground states in the full MBL phase. And due to that property, so the various quantum many-body phenomenon we discussed in the ground state can now be promoted to a highly excited state in the MBL system. And this has been discussed recently by many people.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Why do you call it effective Hamiltonian? Is that supposed to be the original Hamiltonian, or is it different?
Yeah, it's supposed to be the original Hamiltonian.
Just written in different variables?
Yeah, it's not effective means. Yeah, it's not an effective Hamiltonian like a truncating Hilbert space. Hilbert space is not truncated. Yeah.
So, say epsilon AB and epsilon ABC follow exponentially,
yes,
when like separation between AB.
Yes.
What about like if you think about some term with K spins?
They also follow exponentially with number k. Yeah. And I actually will show you evidence of how it falls off. We measure these fall off constants in both in terms of distance and in terms of number of spins. So, yeah, I will show that later. But here, let me present a generic phase diagram we have in mind. So, in the weak disorder limit, the many body. So for eigenstates in a many-body spectrum, if the disorder is weak, typically they will somalize. So that's in the ETH phase. However, if the disorder is strong enough, they will be many-body localized. And because the quantum effect becomes important in the MBL phase, so the MBL phase can be further separated into different phases according to their quantum order. And the quantum order can either be symmetry breaking order or intrinsic topological order or symmetry protected topological order. So there are three aspects in this phase diagram which are of interest. The first one is the MBL to MBL transition. That's this transition. And this is called the marginal called the marginal MBL phase or marginal MBL state. So it's a quantum critical state of a quantum phase transition at finite temperature. And a typical, a famous example of this marginal MBL state is the infinite random singlet state of a disorder spin chain. So the second one is the MBL to ETH transition, which is also the somalization transition. It's a transition from the quantum many-body physics to the classical many-body physics, and with the emergence of statistical mechanics. And the third point is the somalization of marginal MBL system that we go along this line. It goes from a quantum critical system to a somalized system. And this kind of a transition can be discussed in, for example, on the SPT boundary, on the disorder SPT boundary in high dimension. Because in high dimensions, many SPT boundaries are kind of a symmetry protected quantum criticality. So we would like to know whether somalization on the SPT boundary has anything different to the somalization in the bulk, because the boundary has some anomaly. But in this talk, I will mainly focus on the strong disorder region. That's for the MBL and marginal MBL phase, and try to study the holographic interpretation of these phases. And the hope is that this holographic picture will also help us to understand how somalization happens. Okay, so the key physics of MBL is basically encoded in this effective Hamiltonian. So the problem is now, given a disordered many-body Hamiltonian in general, how do we find this effective Hamiltonian? How do we construct these stabilizers? And how do we calculate these energy coefficients? However, finding this effective Hamiltonian is almost as diagonalizing the many-body Hamiltonian, because you can see this effective Hamiltonian is written in the diagonal basis. This is, in general, this is exponentially hard if we consider arbitrary many-body system. But however, for MBL systems, things are different, because in the full MBL phase, every eigenstate in the many-body spectrum follows the area law entanglement entropy, which means it has implies this matrix product states or tensor product state representation of all the eigenstates, which means if I write the eigenstate in the spin basis, the coefficient can be expressed as a matrix product, trace of matrix product or trace of tensor product in this form. So there has been many work trying to find the MPS or TPS representation of the MBL eigenstate, including the initiative works by Professor Vidal here. And in this talk, I will mainly focus on the RG approach. So there actually has been a lot of progress in this direction, including the proposal of real space RGX and DMRGX, where this X stands for excited states. So our method is a special version of real space RGX. It's a generalization of real space RGX for a typical class of system where the spectrum bifurcates at each RG step. So we call it a spectrum bifurcation RG. So to illustrate the idea of this spectrum bifurcation RG, we start with a model. This is a disorder quantum Ising model, which includes both the XX, ZZ, and Z couplings. And the coefficient is drawn randomly. So this model can be also interpreted as a interacting spinless fermions under Jordan-Wigner transformation. So the SBRG starts by picking out the leading energy scale term in this model. For example, it happens to be a ZZ coupling on a particular bond. Then because in the strong disorder limit, then all the other couplings around are expected to be much weaker than this leading energy, leading couplings. So we can rotate the whole Hamiltonian to the diagonal basis of this ZZ coupling. This can be done by a Clifford group rotation. And under this rotation, this ZZ becomes a single effective spin Z, and the spectrum bifurcates at this point to the high or low energy subspace, depending on the sigma Z takes a plus one or minus one. And we can see the other coupling, J1 and J3, they try to connect the high and low energy subspace. So they can be reduced by a second order perturbation process to generate effective couplings among the rest of the spins. And this is another unitary transformation known as the Schiffer-Wolf transformation. So after these two transformations, we can see all the terms in the Hamiltonian now commute with the leading energy scale. So we identify this sigma Z effective spin as a emergent conserved quantity or local integral of motion at this RG step. So each RG step identifies a local integral of motion, and the rest of the system is passed down to the next RG step until all the local integral of motions are formed.
You went from four Hamiltonian terms to three, is that correct? Or
actually, we don't truncate the Hilbert space here. We still put the states here, but it's...
But I'm asking about the number of Hamiltonian terms that you have. You started with, I can count four, including,
yeah.
And now you have three only?
Yes.
So but how did you fuse this? There are two terms that have been fused, right?
Actually, these two terms, they fuse by second order perturbation. It's not generally that the term will get less and less.
But it looks like this term that you fused, these two terms that you have fused into one,
yeah,
they are insensitive to sigma z. So you have identified a constant of motion, sigma z,
yeah,
which could be spin up or spin down.
Yeah.
And this term that you've treated in perturbation theory acts regardless, so acts on high energy and low energy in the same way. Is that?
Yeah, that's an important feature of SBRG, because the high energy and low energy Hilbert space has the same identical structure.
No, I don't have a problem with the structure of the Hilbert space, but this is an interaction term.
But that's not always the case. You can look at this H term. It depends on the sigma z spin.
Okay, so you're saying for this particular example, there is no sigma z there, but in
In general, there's a sigma z here. Okay. You can either have a sigma z here or not a sigma z here.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but we keep all these terms. So the information of spectrum bifurcation is kept in the sigma z operator in the Hamiltonian, and we don't explicitly branch to a specific subspace.
I see.
Yeah.
And the fact that you keep the whole Hilbert space, but you're reducing the terms in the Hamiltonian. So there is some sense of irreversibility there.
This is done by unitary transformation, so it's reversible. Both the Clifford and the Schrieffer-Wolf, they are unitary transformations.
So if you undo the transformation, you'll go
back? Yeah, you'll go back.
From one term to two terms in the Hamiltonian? Okay, I'll have to think about it.
Only approximately, because this Schrieffer-Wolf is approximate. It contains second order perturbation. It means we only keep the second order term up to second order. So we throw out higher order term. If you put them back, then you can transform back. Yeah. And in general, actually, term doesn't get less and less. It actually gets more and more. Because I just make a very simple example here. But in general, we need to keep all the terms. Okay, so the most general case is that we can apply this method to a qubit model. A generic qubit model means the Hamiltonian can be written in terms of a summation of Pauli operators. So this with a random coefficient. This Pauli operator is basically a direct product of Pauli matrices acting on the qubits. So that's the most generic form. And this kind of Hamiltonian can represent both spin and fermion models. Like fermions, we can do Jordan-Wigner transformation, at least in 1D, to this kind of Hamiltonian. So each RG step now contains two unitary transformations. One is the Clifford rotation and followed by a Schrieffer-Wolf transformation. The Clifford rotation basically diagonalizes the leading energy scale at this RG step. And then the Hamiltonian can be written as a leading energy scale plus the terms that commute with the leading energy scale, which means they are in the diagonal block. And the terms that doesn't commute with the leading energy scale, then they are in the off-diagonal block. Then the off-diagonal terms can be reduced to the diagonal block by the Schrieffer-Wolf transformation in terms of at least to the second order accuracy, like this. So each RG step basically block diagonalized the Hamiltonian. And if we keep doing that, we will eventually end up with the diagonal Hamiltonian, which is the effective Hamiltonian we're looking for. And this later RG step will not scramble the Hilbert space, will not scramble this space we have previously diagonalized, because the later RG transformation are performed in the diagonal block only. So we can keep doing that, and then eventually we get the effective Hamiltonian. And if we collect this RG transformations in each step, we get a unitary matrix which maps the original Hamiltonian to this effective Hamiltonian.
I have another question, sorry.
Yeah.
So I've heard the criticism of RSRG. So this is similar? Is that similar to RSRG?
Real space RG, yeah.
Yeah, is that
similar?
So I would like to understand how you have addressed the criticism that I hear on this RSRG, which is that you have to start with a very well specific Hamiltonian for it to work. It has to be designed Hamiltonian. So it's not, so you say your scheme works for a generic qubit model. So that's not the case for usual RSRG.
Yeah,
so how do you go?
RSRG trying to have a closed form RG, which means it doesn't generate more terms. I mean, you start from like a ZZ XX term, then you keep running RG, still ZZX, X, but just the coefficient renormalized.
Right.
But here we're allowed to generate new terms. But then we keep track of it using computer. We just keep everything in the computer.
But what are the transformations R and S?
This is a Clifford rotation and Schiffer-Wolf.
So
that's not real space. SRG stands for real space.
No, I know. But R is the Clifford rotation.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's very specific. That will work if your Hamiltonian is nicely written in that basis.
If the Hamiltonian has only one unique leading energy scale, like we cannot do Heisenberg, cannot do XY, because like in the XY, you have two degenerate leading energy.
So my question is, how is it reflected in this slide, right? You say generic qubit model.
Generic qubit model with a generic coefficient which don't degenerate.
Oh, I
see. Yeah, because if you degenerate, you cannot pick out the unique leading
energy. Yeah. That was my concern. So how do you characterize this type? H should not be degenerate and that's it?
Yeah, that's it.
I thought you were assuming that the spectrum of possible ages, the different values of age, that there should be always a big gap. You're going to use perturbation theory.
Yes, so that's the next slide. So I want to talk if the RG flow towards strong disorder limit.
No, but the method itself works assuming that there is H, the largest H that you have in when you write the Hamiltonian in the Pauli basis, the largest H is separated by a finite gap to the next one, where you're going to use perturbation theory, so I'm assuming that to second order, so which is leading order, right?
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that you're assuming.
Yeah, you only need the largest H much larger than the nearby terms. You don't need to be larger than very far away term because you don't perturb with those terms currently. Yeah. So
if somebody gives me the same Hamiltonian but just with a small rotation of Pauli matrices, then these properties have changed. So if the same Hamiltonian written in a different orientation of the Pauli matrices,
the property doesn't change because this rotation of basis doesn't change the coefficient. You change the contents of the matrix, but
no. So take the opposite. Suppose that I change H, the edges, which reflect the fact that I've changed my orientation of the Pauli matrices. This will affect H's.
Yeah, if you change H, this.
And so that will affect whether you can apply this method or not. I'm trying to understand if the applicability of this method is the same as or similar to RAS RG. Or if you have overcome this limitation of the previous method.
It doesn't overcome the limitation.
Overcome.
Yeah.
But should I understand this in the following way, that if your system doesn't have any extra symmetries, then generically you expect that at each step there will be, there will not be degeneracies, as you were saying.
No, but he's not assuming just lack of degeneracies. He's assuming a big gap between the largest age and the next age. He's going to use perturbation theory.
But I think that, like the initial concern that you raised, what sensitivity, what happens if you actually have degeneracy variance?
No.
I think the second concern is legitimate, about the energy scale. But I think Everett will argue that at least there are some cases where it kind of flows to the to this hierarchy.
Yeah, the perturbation theory is good if this sigma is much less than H0, right? But this sigma is not the next leading energy scale. Sigmas are
local.
Yeah.
No, I have to say that, and I think that's very important. I mean, that's good news.
Yeah. So actually, this slide tries to answer the question. So does the RG flow towards strong disorder limit? However, the answer to this question depends on the Hamiltonian, whether it's in the localized phase or in the thermalized phase. If the many-body Hamiltonian is localized in the localized phase, then the RG does flow towards strong disorder. Otherwise, it will flow away from strong disorder. So to characterize the RG flow, we studied this parameter that's called the Solace parameter introduced by these peoples. And this is precisely this sigma over H ratio. So this is, because H is the leading energy scale, so this ratio is between 0 and 1. So if this ratio is very small, then we are good. We can do a perturbative calculation. Otherwise, we cannot. But then this ratio can flow under RG. So at each RG step, we can stop there and ask what's this ratio. And what we see is that indeed, so this is the length scale. So this is RG flow. In some cases, this ratio, I plotted in log G. So it flows towards zero. And in other cases, when the Hamiltonian is close to a thermalized phase, it will flow away from zero. This ratio also has a physical meaning, which is the resonance energy over the level spacing. Because at each RG step, the spectrum basically bifurcates. And the leading energy scale controls the amount of bifurcation. And this leading energy scale also controls the level, typical level spacing. So, and sigma terms doesn't commute with this H0, so they try to resonate these levels. So if the resonance is very strong, which means G is close to one, then the system will tend to thermalize, because resonance strong means level repulsion is strong and we have thermalized phase. Then SBRG doesn't work. So if G is small, and actually if G flows towards zero, in that case, SBRG will work very well. So we actually monitor this G flow when we do the RG flow. And when we see this G doesn't flow towards zero, we just stop. We know our result is not reliable in that case. So how well does SBRG work in the many-body localized phase? We can benchmark with exact diagonalization for small systems. So we take this quantum Ising model, and the coefficients are drawn from some power law distribution. Well, there's a parameter gamma zero controls the disorder strength. So larger gamma correspond to stronger disorder. So the whole RG transformation is a unitary transformation that diagonalized the, or approximately diagonalized the many-body Hamiltonian. So we can restore the eigenstate from this unitary transformation. It's very simple. You just take the eigenstate of the effective Hamiltonian, which are direct product states of these emergent qubits, and transform them back to the original basis by reversing the RG transformation. So we get the original states in the original basis, eigenstate. And although we have both the Clifford group rotation and Shriver-Wolf transformation in hand, explicitly computing this product is still expensive. So at this step, we make a further approximation by dropping all the Shriver-Wolf transformation because they are very close to identity. And that's approximately restore the eigenstate from the Clifford rotation. Turns out this is very efficient because this unitary rotation is called is known as a Clifford circuit in quantum information, and applying Clifford circuit to a direct product state can be carried out very efficiently. Then we can benchmark the state with ED eigenstate by calculating the fidelity, which is the many-body overlap. And we can see for media disorder, the fidelity level is around 0.5, which is okay. And if you increase the disorder, and you can see the fidelity level can increase systematically.
Sorry, but if you look how Shriver-Wolf, doesn't it become, mean that it kind of becomes everything is commuting, kind of?
But the point of MBL is you have a lot of commuting. Yeah, so every eigenstate is specified by a bunch of local integral of motions. So then,
So this fidelity was, can you repeat what this fidelity was? Can you just say again what this fidelity is measuring?
This measures the overlap of this RG estimated eigenstate with the exact diagonalization for 8-spin lattice in this feature.
So you're looking at the degree of truncation or the effect of?
Yeah. We're trying to benchmark whether this state is close to ED. I should say this result is not very good. Actually, compared to DMRGX, DMRGX can do a much better job. But the point is that DMRGX typically focus on some specific eigenstate.
And you can get the whole spectrum.
Yeah, we get the whole spectrum. So it's a low accuracy but high efficient algorithm.
Let me ask you another question. Oh. This Clifford circuit,
yeah.
Is it unique?
That's not unique. That's up to gauge transformation.
So you have... So the Clifford gauge, we're trying to get your
at each RG step, you have some redundancy. You have some choice.
You have a choice.
Yeah. Because you want to diagonalize block diagonalize a matrix.
But any choice is good.
But But yeah, any choice, because eventually you end up with a full diagonalized. Each time you block diagonalize, that has a choice because you can do unitary transformation in the block. But eventually it will be taken care of by the later RG step. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So the whole Clifford circuit actually gives us the matrix product state representation for every eigenstate of the MBL system. Because the Clifford circuit consists of Clifford gates. So each Clifford gate is the Clifford rotation we've done in a particular RG step. And the Clifford gate can be considered as a matrix product operator with bound dimension equals 2. And so the whole Clifford circuit is just a big matrix product operator with bound dimension bounded by the circuit depth. And because this is a RG transformation, so the circuit depth is at most logarithmic in system size. And this logarithmic depth is only saturated at the marginal MBL critical line. So if we are deep in the MBL phase, then the RG will finish at a finite depth. And actually, in that case, the matrix product operator will have a bound dimension independent of the system size.
Sorry, why do you say that left is the most log n?
Because in order to reach this depth, you need to first run some, because you start from a local Hamiltonian. Yeah. So the first several disentanglers are very local. And then you build up longer range and longer range entangle.
But if I wanted to give you, with really bad intention, I give you Hamiltonian where you have to act sequentially, so you will, so that you can, you may have to act with this Clifford gate. You'll have n of them, right? You could have n of them.
Yeah.
And so that could be
at most n.
At most n.
But this n of them cannot act along the same line, right? It's highly unlikely.
Unlikely, maybe, but it could happen, right?
Because at
least, I'm saying, is that an argument of you don't expect the depth to be larger than log n?
Yeah, I should say I don't expect. I don't have an exact proof for that.
Okay. Yeah. No, but you could build counterexamples where the depth would be n. And you could dismiss it on you could say this will never happen in practice.
Yeah. You can build examples, but that example typically corresponds to a highly non-local Hamiltonian. Because
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay. So
you can build that example.
You may not be able to prove it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the feeling is that
okay.
For local
I agree with the feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is a big MPO, and if we input the direct product state from these emergent qubits, then this will transform the MPO to an MPS representation of a particular MBL eigenstate. So because the entanglement entropy of the state is bounded by the bound dimension of the MPO, which is also the bound dimension of the MPS, so the entanglement entropy can scale logarithmically along the marginal MBL critical line, and it should satisfy the area law deep in the MBL phase. So now let's take a closer look at this Clifford circuit. So each time I do a Clifford gate, it basically transforms the leading energy scale term to its diagonal form. And this transformation identifies a special qubit, that's this red one, as an emergent qubit. So the whole MPO basically is a unitary transformation from the original physical qubits to the RG emergent qubits. And this RG emergent qubit has triple identities. So first of all, it's a local integral of motions in the effective Hamiltonian that corresponds to this tau z's. And secondly, it controls the spectrum branching. So say, for example, the emergent qubit in the state zero, then the RG transformation will project this Hilbert space to the low energy subspace. However, if it is in state one, it will project to the high energy subspace. So it controls the spectrum branching. That's why it also controls the later RG transformation, expressed as these are control gates. These black dots are control gates. So later RG transformation will depend on the spectrum branching you previously performed. But we don't perform the spectrum branching explicitly. They are all implicitly encoded in the Hamiltonian. So finally, these emergent qubits are also holographic bulk degree of freedoms in a holographic interpretations of the MBL system. The idea is that every Hilbert space preserving RG can be interpreted as a holographic mapping. And the RG transformation is a unitary transformation that maps the holographic boundary to the holographic bulk. So there has been a lot of discussion of RG, the relation between RG and holography in both condensed matter and high energy physics communities. And SBRG is also a Hilbert space preserving RG, so it also has a holographic interpretation. And here we will follow the idea of exact holographic mapping proposed by Xiaolian Qi. So in this realization, the method is first applied to a free fermion system without disorder. So at each RG step, the two sites are cross-grained into an effective site, either in the low energy substrate or in the high energy substrate, depending on the bulk degree of freedom. So under the RG flow, a tensor network can be generated, which maps the boundary fermions to the bulk. So here for the SBRG, we do the same thing. We basically pick out all these emergent qubits as the bulk degree of freedom. So our Clifford circuit now becomes a tensor network that maps the boundary to the bulk. And because we are considering these random systems, disorder systems, so the network is not regular. It's a random Clifford circuit. And it also maps the MBL eigenstate to a direct product state in the bulk. So it basically can be considered as a disentangular network or a random version of MARA, and which progressively removes the entanglement in the many-body wave function. So, yeah.
In the previous slide, I'm missing the control qubits down here. So is that supposed to be the same circuit that you had up there?
Yes, yes.
So in that circuit, you had that the emergent local integrals of motion were still being used as control qubits,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Not here anymore. Is that correct? You know, the red lines, the
red
extended
line.
Red lines,
red line
are
red
being
line.
Used there as control?
Yeah, it's also used as the bulk degree of freedom.
I understand that, but I see a mismatch between that circuit and this circuit. The upper circuit is, once you have identified your local integral of motion, you still have that you have to use it as a control.
Oh, yeah. I didn't plot it out. These later gates will be controlled.
Oh,
by
I see. Okay.
It's too complicated,
oh,
so
okay,
I didn't
okay,
plot
okay.
it.
But it's missing,
yeah.
But it should be there.
Yeah, it should be there.
Okay.
So why do we need to talk about holography? I think it provides us a geometric interpretation of the entanglement structure in the many-body wave function. For example, the entanglement entropy can be interpreted as the minimum surface in the holographic bulk. Oh, here I draw these
yes.
controls. Yeah. And following the Reed-Takayanagi formula. So also the correlation function and mutual information on the boundary is also related to the geodesic distance in the holographic bulk. So in general, if we want to do a full spectrum holographic mapping for a generic many-body system, it's quite challenging because we cannot really diagnose the many-body system. But MBL is very special. It provides some new opportunity because this kind of system is, in some sense, quasi-solvable, which means it allows a Hilbert space preserving RG. And using this RG, we can do a controlled holographic mapping of the entire many-body Hilbert space, not just for a ground state. So, now I want to talk about some physical properties of this holographic mapping and try to discover the bulk geometry. So the first quantity I want to calculate is the entanglement entropy. So because all the states in the MBL spectrum is now generated from the direct product state by applying this Clifford circuit. Within this approximation, all states have roughly the same entanglement entropy, which is purely given by the Clifford circuit. And the entanglement entropy, roughly speaking, is just very simple. It's just you count the number of Clifford gates broken by the minimum surface, because each Clifford gate is an MPO with bound dimension 1 bit. So each one broken by the minimum surface will contribute 1 bit entropy to the entanglement cut of region A. And more precisely, this counting can be made more precise by a stabilizer rank algorithm, which is a very fast algorithm in quantum information theory to calculate the entanglement entropy in the stabilizer state. And using this calculation, we can calculate the entanglement entropy in various phases. So the phases I'm talking about is the phases of this model. So this model has two, in the strong disorder limit, it has two MBL phases. One is the spin glass phase in the large J limit, and the paramagnetic phase in the large K and H limit. So they are separated by a marginal MBL critical line here. And we can see that the entanglement entropy saturates to a constant, which is the area law in the MBL phase, that's these lines. And it follows a logarithmic scaling along the A to B, this critical line. So this is entropy and this is log L. So because of this logarithmic scaling, we can see if we look at the half system size entanglement entropy that's here, then it will actually diverge in the thermodynamic limit. So we can use this fact to pin down the phase boundary by keeping track of the local maximum. So this feature, I plot the color is not very contrast. So I plot the entanglement half system size entanglement entropy, and this is the local maximum. So if we just look at this marginal MBL system, there's a logarithmic scaling. And by fitting this logarithmic scaling, we obtain the effective central charge. It turns out that this effective central charge is related to the central charge of the clean system and times log 2. That's for Marana icing systems proposed by Raphael Moore. So we measure that. And we can see the central charge is 0.5 log 2 from A to B. And only becomes 1 times log 2 at the B point. B point is where H is 0. Because when H is 0, the model is just a JK model. And it can be mapped to two independent Marana chains. So the central charge just doubles. But otherwise, if you turn on the H term, that's an interchain coupling that becomes a 1 Marana chain.
How did you solve this model?
By running the RG. Yeah, we find the Clifford circuit, and then we calculate the entanglement entropy.
But you could have solved it in other ways. This is precarious, right?
This is the interaction.
Oh, that's the interaction.
Yeah. You have XXZ and the interaction.
Oh, so you have to use the method.
Yeah. But for special point, that A point, B point, you can solve as that's precarious. That's right. But the entire phase diagram is intact.
And you went to system size of 2 to the 8, or?
2 to the 8, right. This is half system size.
So just by doing Clifford gates without the Schiffer loop, you can get the central charge, right?
Yeah. Because previously, when we do free fermion problem, that's only involve Clifford gate. Yeah, real space RG only involve Clifford gate. When they...
For free particles.
No. Yeah, for free particles.
But that's not the part.
That's not, but I'm saying that Clifford gate already captured this entanglement entropy, this area law and logarithmic entanglement entropy. Of course, it cannot capture volume law. Like if you are very close to the thermalization phase, then this, I mean, the Schiffer-Wolf is another layer of transformation upon the Clifford gate. It will give you additional entanglements.
What's kind of confusing is if you have some non-trivial CFT here hidden somehow.
Disordered.
Yeah, we cannot treat any non-trivial CFT.
So is the fact that it's free fermion somehow?
Yeah, it's the fact that it's icing, which means it has a pretty simple fusion rule. Yeah.
I see. That's why just doing.
Yeah, you fuse to icing either to one or to psi. Yeah.
Supposing it has a more complicated paramagnetic spin glass transition, do you think it's still...
No, like if you consider SU2 level K parafermion, then this doesn't work in general. For K doesn't equal to 2. This is K equals to 2. So everything depends on whether the spectrum bifurcates. So if you have a SU2 level K only for K equals 2, the spectrum bifurcates.
But if there are no extra symmetries, then it bifurcates. Is that right?
Yeah, no, but if for a Heisenberg chain, the spectrum becomes singly and triply. That's not bifurcation. That's a high energy, low energy subspace are different, has different Hilbert state structure. Then our method fail.
But there is extra symmetry.
Yeah.
So why would your method fail there?
Because we want to keep track of this spectrum branching
yes.
only in the Hamiltonian by an operator. That means this, say, a sigma z operator is plus one, means in the high energy subset, minus one. Yeah. So we require the high and low energy subsets to have the same Hilbert state structure. Yeah, so it doesn't work like for U1 and SU2, those kind of symmetry. So it's a very special class. That's why we call it spectrum bifurcation, because it's really very important for our method to work. Okay, so now we can also look at this local integral of motion, which plays a central role in the MBL system. And this local integral of motion has a holographic duality in it. So in the bulk, they correspond to the emergent qubit. In the holographic boundary, they are the stabilizers that specify the states. So in order to obtain the stabilizers in the original basis, we can just start from the qubit, emergent qubit operator, and transform it back to the boundary using the Clifford circuit. So to gain some intuition, let's plot these stabilizers here. So as these color dots. So each dot is a Pauli matrix. So each stabilizer is just a product of Pauli matrices. And we can see for the marginal MBL phase that's along this critical line, we can form longer and longer stabilizers at lower and lower energy scale. This is the energy scale, which can be read off from the effective Hamiltonian here. So the RG keeps running towards infrared. However, for the MBL system, we can see the RG just stop at a certain energy scale where all the stabilizers are formed. And in that case, the stabilizers are basically short range. So having this picture in mind, we can try to measure the stabilizer locality very quantitatively. So first, let's define the stabilizer length. The length of the stabilizer is a head-to-tail distance of this stabilizer. So we can collect this length and look at what's the probability distribution of this length. What we found is that in the MBL phase, this length fall off, this probability fall off with length exponentially, which means the stabilizers are exponentially localized, which are these green and orange line here. However, for the marginal MBL system, this probability has a power law decay, which can be seen from the tail. And to confirm, we switch to the log-log plot, and we can see very nice slope. And the slope are the same, basically. They are all around 2, which means this coefficient, this power alpha is always 2 from A to B along the critical line, which means interaction doesn't seem to change alpha. And it seems that the whole critical line is governed by the same universality class, except for B point. And we can also ask another question, how does this length scale with this energy scale? And it turns out this length scale as logarithmic energy to the power eta, where eta equals 2. So this eta is also, we can see this eta in this universal Dyson singularity of the spin susceptibility at low frequency. That means it will have a peak at omega tends to 0. And this we will see this eta here. And it turns out that the whole critical line is governed by the same eta. It has always 2 along the line. And another quantity. Yeah.
Before you move on. So you compare marginal MBL with MBL.
Yes.
But what about marginal MBL? How does it compare to thermalizer phase?
Oh.
In terms of integrals of motion, I'm assuming you'll say there are no such integrals of motion.
In the
thermalizing phase?
All the integral of motion are all in the local.
All of them, or most of them? Are...
That's not clear yet. That's still an open question. So there are different ways, different understanding of how MBL to ETH happens. So one idea is that there's a mobility edge, and the other is there's not. Picture, we can cannot understand why there's a...
This marginal MBL is between two MBLs.
Yeah, this is between two MBLs. That's not... Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you start from the effective Hamiltonian, you will expect as long as one stabilizer becomes non-local, highly non-local, I mean extended, it will enter extended phase. Yeah, besides these stabilizer properties, we can also look at the energy coefficient. That's something we can calculate from the SBRG. So we look at this coefficient and ask how they scale with two parameters. One is how they scale with the real space distance. So for example, we can take these two body interaction and ask how does this interaction fall off with the interstabilizer distance. And I define it as the center of mass distance between these two stabilizers. So we can see in the MBL phase, it falls off exponentially because the stabilizers are local. And so that means they can only interact with each other when they are very close to each other. That's why the interaction is also local. However, if we are in the marginal MBL system, the stabilizer has a power law overlapping tail. So in that case, we have a power law decay. Another scaling is with respect to the order of interaction. That's what Max was asking just now. And we can ask how does the n-body interaction decays with the number of body n here. And what we found is that it always decays exponentially in both the MBL and marginal MBL system. And actually, these scalings have some physical meaning. They are intrinsic, MBL intrinsic physics that is beyond Anderson localization. For example, the real space decay, this Kc, is related to the logarithmic entropy growth after a global quench, which is studied in these papers. And this Fock space decay, we may call it a Fock space decay, these decay constants will show up in the power law dynamic conductivity here. And actually, this decay constant will also have a critical value 1 over log 2 at the summalization transition. That means even at the summalization transition, this is still an exponential decay in the Fock space. OK, so finally, I would like to say something about the holographic geometry. So we can study the geometry of the holographic bulk basically by defining the distance. So the distance between two emergent qubits is defined as the mutual information from the mutual information of the two qubits. But of course, mutual information is only defined for a specific state. So let's take the energy eigenstate. And previously, I said that every energy eigenstate is mapped into the bulk as a direct product state. But that's not exact. That's just an approximate. So what we can do is actually we can map using the Clifford circuit and maps the original Hamiltonian really into the bulk unitarily. So that's we call it a holographic Hamiltonian. And because the Clifford circuit doesn't diagonalize the original Hamiltonian exactly, so there's some residual off-diagonal terms. And these off-diagonal terms will introduce entanglement between the bulk qubits. So the off-diagonal term, the portion of the off-diagonal term can be measured by this ratio. And we can see in the strong disorder limit, this ratio tends to 0, which means the holographic Hamiltonian is almost diagonalized. That means there's almost no entanglement among the qubits in the bulk. So the qubits are infinite far away from each other in terms of this distance. And the bulk geometry is fragmented into isolated points. However, if we weaken the disorder, we can see the off-diagonal terms will grow. And it will generate more and more entanglement among the qubits, and the qubit become closer and closer. And if to some point that the off-diagonal terms is comparable to the diagonal terms, then basically, for example, in certain region, this happens. Then in that region, the holographic Hamiltonian will look like a random matrix, and the corresponding eigenstate will look like a thermal state. So that kind of region can be interpreted as a small black hole because the qubits are maximally entangled with each other. But these are still speculative understandings. We are still trying to carry out this calculation of distance. Let me sum up. So the spectrum bifurcation RG, in one hand, is a numerical method to study MBL physics. And on the other hand, it's an entanglement. It provides us entanglement holographic mapping of the MBL system. So with this holographic picture, the whole phase diagram has interesting geometric meanings. Like the MBL phase can be considered as a fragmented space with IR region kept off. And the marginal MBL line is an inhomogeneous hyperbolic space. And the summalization transition corresponds to the black hole formation. However, SBRG cannot really approach this summalization transition, but there are other approaches like the phenomenological RG and method based on random Clifford circuit and method based on ancestor wave functions. And the hope is that maybe holography and can provide us a fourth method, a fourth idea. That's we can start from the MBL phase, because in the MBL phase, we can do controlled calculation, and maybe it's a good starting point. We can start to approach this ETH from the MBL phase and see how black hole forms in the holographic bulk. And maybe combined with quantum information and holography, we can eventually understand symbolization and the origin of statistical mechanics. So thanks.
Suppose you were to start with very weak interactions and very strong disorders. Can you use your method to kind of prove that many-body localization exists analytically, or give a strong argument in favor? I mean, I guess there is a proof by Imbre.
Yeah.
Is it kind of?
We cannot give a proof of that because our method miss something. That's the many body. Yeah, that's in the. So our method basically treats the local entanglement very well. So these are disentanglers locally, but we cannot treat this some long range entanglement, which is mediated by the UV IR resonance. So the IR spin you found later can actually mediate some resonance between the UV degree of freedom. But at that step, it's too late to treat this entanglement because you have already found this UV spin. You assume they don't resonate. But if later you find a resonating path, you cannot treat that. Yeah, like if you, like it at the UV scale, current scale, you found two stabilizers, two emergent qubits. And they are of very large but very similar energy. For example, one has energy 1. The other has 1.001. But they are very far apart. So you consider they don't resonate. But they have a very close in energy. They're close to degenerate. Then actually a very weak coupling between them can resonate them. But this weak coupling cannot be formed at this UE scale. Because when you do this transformation, the you found longer and longer range couplings gradually. So only in the IR energy scale, you suddenly found IR spin can resonate these two UV degree of freedom. This effect is included in the high dimensional correction, a high order correction of our perturbation. We don't do the perturbation to infinite order. That's why we miss that. But that process is very important to symbolization. Actually, symbolization.
Suppose you're in the many body localized.
Yeah. Yeah, then we need to really check. That means we can do the following thing. We can first run the RG, doing that. And then we map the original Hamiltonian into the bulk. Then we can check this resonance in the bulk. If we see a lot of UV IR mixing, then we say, oh, it's no good. It's maybe it can summarize. Then if we don't see that, then, yeah.
But can one give an analytic argument that, you know, in the limit of weak interaction, these resonances do not play a role, or do they play a role?
Yeah, you need to measure how rare this resonance is.
Like, are there scaling arguments that can be made, or is it just too complicated?
Yeah, I'm not aware of any scaling argument, but my feeling is that if you are really deep in the MBL phase, the scaling, this resonance should be rare, such that you can ignore them. Yeah, but I don't have a proof. Mobility edge means if you go to different energy scales, in some energy scale you see it's a thermalized bulk, in other it's a localized, which means the UV degree of freedom will control the Hamiltonian in the IR. That means if you pick a state, if you pick the UV degree of freedom differently, your IR Hamiltonian will look very different. Either, yeah, UV will control your IR Hamiltonian either in the thermalized phase or in the localized phase. But But in order to have that effect, actually, let's say. So if we look at this effective Hamiltonian, in order to control the IR degree of freedom by UV, actually that means if you switch this, maybe this sigma z to, from plus one to minus one, the rest of the Hamiltonian will suddenly look very different. Then that means we need some very delicate interference between the terms. That means these coefficients must be correlated to each other in order to have this cancellation effect.
But yeah. Is that still a good Hamiltonian? For the
I cannot say for formalization, because for formalization, basically, once you have formalization, this is not a good Hamiltonian. But if you have a mobility edge between two MBL phases, like MBL to MBL transition, maybe it's still possible to have a mobility edge in that case. Yeah. So a typical case is so this is your maybe this is your energy density, and yeah, forget about this axis. So one case is that if you this is your ground state and this is your top state, say for example your Hamiltonian is bounded, then both are MBL state. Then if the two state belongs to different, say, SPT class, then it's very likely that there is a transition here. Then you can have a mobility. You can have a mobility. It's not a mobility. Yeah, I shouldn't say mobility. There's a phase transition in your spectrum.
One of the phase transitions you had before.
But that's, yeah, that's a different transition. That's tuned by the parameter, not tuned by the energy scale. So you have some parameter, and this is MBL1, and this is MBL2. And the whole spectrum suddenly transforms, transition from one to another. That's tuned by parameter. But you can also tune by energy. It's also possible, yeah.
Actually, in that case, is it true that for all energy densities, the transition happens?
At least in this framework, in this effective Hamiltonian framework. Because this corresponds to a transition of all the stabilizers. All the stabilizers must become long range and become short range again. So this is a power law localized stabilizers, and they become another set of stabilizers. So through a transition. So all the stabilizers.
But somehow you're assuming that it occurs, that you're already kind of putting it into.
These are toy models that assume already particular mechanism, and probably it's not well understood.
Yeah.
More questions?
Thank you.